Science confirms what our hearts know to be true. Our family, and in this instance more specifically, our siblings, have a profound effect on our own lives and personalities. Fellow passengers, on our own journey of growing up, we shape collective memories together from playrooms, bedrooms, dinner tables. A foundation built from sideways glances, inside jokes, and shared scars. And then we move out, we grow up. We start separate lives in separate places. Our collective memories diverge and begin to yellow with nostalgia. And then life and its infinite shifts tilt our lives back together again. Birth, death, a diagnosis, a fight, and we once again write another chapter in our shared life narratives. Welcome to Steps to Value, a podcast that explores the intersection of people, process, and technology in healthcare as we move toward a more value-focused model. I'm your host, Rod Pihowski, and in today's episode, we'll talk with the Stroud sisters, Beth and Max. One sister thriving with cancer, the other a health IT consultant and social worker. In this conversation from Hymn 17, we talk about their own shared narrative documenting Beth's patient experience to explore gaps in health data interoperability that may not be evident to those from within the healthcare organization. Now, stay on your side of the back seat, quit poking me, and stop making that face. All that and more coming up. HIMSS communities are a great way for HIMSS members to volunteer by supporting their favorite health IT topics. Community members network with other health IT experts and professionals, contribute to health IT policy, develop tools and resources for the health IT workforce, and more. If you're interested in helping us shape the HIMSS mission, check out our 11 communities at hims.org/communities. Not a HIMSS member yet? Visit hims.org/membership. Max Stroud is lead consultant at Galen Healthcare. Her sister Beth Stroud is a PhD candidate in religious studies at Princeton and a lung cancer survivor. Max, Beth, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Beth, would you please share your patient story with our listeners?
I'd be happy to. I have been living with lung cancer for a little over 4 years. I was diagnosed in my early 40s, and like many people who are diagnosed with lung cancer at a young age, we went through all kinds of theories and treatments and possibilities before we finally figured out that it was cancer. My doctors thought I had asthma that was out of control, walking pneumonia, bronchitis, and it wasn't until after many, many months of my symptoms not responding to antibiotics, not responding to steroids, that we finally figured out that I had cancer. It turned out I had a pretty advanced case of lung cancer, which is also very common. Lung cancer is often diagnosed in a pretty advanced stage. It was in both lungs and possibly in my bones as well. And I underwent a couple different kinds of chemotherapy, some genetic testing. After about 6 months, my oncologist ran another series of tests, and we discovered that I had an unusual gene mutation, which happily is very responsive to one of the newer genetic medications. And so once I started treatment with a new medication, I've been doing much better with just one major setback along the way. I've been in good health and able to work on my studies, able to parent, able to live a mostly pretty normal life for about 3 years.
That's excellent and outstanding, and I'm really happy to hear that.
Thank you.
So, Max, you're a healthcare insider, and we're going to ask you your opinion on this too, but I'm going to throw you for a loop. Beth, did your experience, was there anything that you took away from this that you would like to see improved or that, you know, kind of surprised you? And then we'll go to you, Max, and get your answer because you're on the inside. Beth, you're looking at this from the outside. What was your experience like and what did you take away from that?
Well, with all of the incredible technology that we have, it's astonishing to run across some of the things that just don't work well. For example, one of the most important diagnostic tools or set of diagnostic tools is imaging studies, PET scans, CT scans, absolutely critical to understanding what's going on with a patient's cancer. Very, very hard, though, to transfer from one institution to another. If I have a CT scan at one hospital and need to go somewhere else for a second opinion, I have to make sure I get a hard copy of the DVD and carry it with me on my person and place it in the doctor's hand. And even then, it doesn't always work because sometimes their system can't process the data or incorporate the data into their computer system. Another thing that seems strange to me is the medicine that I take is a clinical trial is in a clinical trial. So I for the clinical trial I need to keep a pill diary. The study needs a record of what time I took the medication every single day and if I had side effects. Now, the way this happens is the research nurse at my hospital assigned to the study gives me a paper pill diary. I take it home. I can't keep track of paper very well, so I use an app in my phone to record what time I take my medications every day. Then, when I go back to the doctor every 2 months, I take out that paper pill diary, and by hand, I fill in all the times that I took my medication, copying it from my phone. And then I know somewhere on the other end, there's someone taking that paper record and making it electronic again. And it just seems very time-consuming and unnecessary, especially for me as a patient.
And prone to error as well.
Yes. With every step in the transcription, there's another possibility for error, of course.
So Max, as we promised, you're on the inside of this. So what shocked you the most in dealing with the system on your sister's behalf?
I think it's some of the same things that Beth said. And part of what inspired me to kind of engage her in this process of like, hey, let's talk about this experience and what's happening here is that, you know, I spend a lot of my time working with doctors and nurses and billing offices and mapping out workflows and where does the data need to be? How do we get it there? How do we get it there in the right format so that it's malleable so you can work with it? And Beth's story shows both of those, right? On the precision medicine side, the machines and the systems and the things that needed to happen to keep her alive worked, but on the customer service side and on the patient side, nobody's looking at the patient workflow. Like the patient has work to do, and 80% of healthcare happens outside of the four walls of the healthcare setting. And so I really got curious about this process and just looking at it with Beth. And so what if I take those workflow analysis skills and look at what's really happening with her data? And that led to some really great conversations.
Give us an example of a great conversation.
Well, our whole presentation started with a tweet at one point where Beth asked me, why do I have to sign 10 releases of information so that my doctors can talk to each other? And I said, well, actually you shouldn't have to because you have HIPAA agreements with all of them. This is all for treatment and operations, but it's still a policy at a lot of these institutions, and it's, you know, a record of her consent. So that was one of the conversations. I think another one was just kind of even during one hospitalization, being on the floor and talking about kind of what her experiences were and talking to the doctors and the people that came through the room about kind of, okay, where is this data going? When are we getting this data back? And it was also kind of a fun, it sounds awkward, but it was a fun distraction while we were in a pretty scary and traumatic situation.
We're both geeks, so we had a lot of fun and distracted ourselves from from my health crisis by sitting in the hospital room talking about how things could be different and how we might make this useful to the world for Max professionally, just how things could be engineered in a better way.
Yeah, and that kind of falls into, you know, this whole patient experience thing, and we talk about the user experience. My colleague Adam Baser is real involved in the user experience, and part of that is with, you know, the human-computer interface. But writ large, we're talking about your interaction with the system and how that all works. And it sounds like you were able to identify a lot of redundancy and, you know, kind of it's quizzical sometimes, like, why are they doing things like this? And it sounds like some of the paperwork was a holdover, and we still haven't made that complete transformation. So since this all began, have you noticed any changes in interoperability, which is what we're really talking about here, since you started this? Anything for the better or even for the worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think the things that I've noticed in the industry since I've started this journey and exploration with my sister and really listening to other chronic patients online is I'm starting to see more payers really interested in the process and realizing that there is an ROI in keeping people healthy. One of the things that we're going to get with better interoperability and better data systems and data transmission is that, you know, we're going to be able to reduce duplicate tests. We had an experience where Beth was in a hospital setting and the decision was made that she was going to transfer from an ER back to the cancer center. And I was there with her. And I said, that's fine. We'll go. But we need that CD of those images. You just did a scan of her lungs and we don't want to do that again tonight. Because I knew that was the next step. So there's kind of two pieces. I mean, one, I see the interoperability getting, the conversations are starting to happen, I think, of what the impact is to the patient. And I think payers are starting to see that if they can help make that experience more frictionless, that it'll save them money in the long run.
Yeah, you know, to your point about ROI, you know, it needs to be demonstrated, and if it's there, that's a motive for people to start, you know, doing that as a best practice. We used to call that sneaker net, when you just move floppy drives and CDs from place to place. It's not the real thing. All right. Do you mind if I ask you a little more of a personal question? I mean, we're already talking about something that's pretty personal, but as sisters, how did this experience of working through this together affect your relationship as siblings?
It's been great. My sister Max is she's a health IT consultant, but her background is in social work, and having her to walk with me through the process of my diagnosis, my treatment, through some of my setbacks and hospitalizations has been it's really been amazing, and I think it's probably been kind of our finest hour as sisters. We got along okay.
Oh, yeah.
Growing up, the usual tensions that siblings experience.
No, there was never tension.
Well, we're not going to talk about the time she made me step in dog poop, right?
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
She made you, right?
We are, there are three of us. I'm in the middle, and Max is the youngest. So my illness, in a lot of ways, has been my first chance to really firsthand see and appreciate Max doing what she does. It's really phenomenal to see her in her professional role, to see her interacting with other people in the industry, to hear the, you know, just the smart observations that she makes about my care. And with that social work background, she's also done amazing things for me, such as letting me know that I would be eligible for Social Security disability when that was something I wasn't even thinking about.
Max, from your point of view?
You know, I think it just makes me, the whole experience really makes me better, a better person and better at my work. I mean, I feel like Beth's story is something that I can, that I carry with me when I do my work. And one of the things that I think about every day, like no matter how mundane the task that I'm doing is, you know, I'm not working a task to get it off my list. I'm not bogged down by interface errors and thinking this is busy work. It's every piece of data is about patient care, and I carry that with me.
Having you both here in the same room, we're at our annual conference at HIMSS in Orlando, and we're in this room together, and I can feel the power of your, you know, your connection to each other, and it's a privilege to see this. I really thank you for doing this. We have a fun question for you before we wrap up. If there's nothing else you'd like to add, is there anything that you never get to say that no one ever asks you?
Well, I wouldn't say this is something no one ever asks me, but one of the things I said in our session yesterday that a lot of people seem to have picked up and retweeted was when I said that really I am the sole complete repository of my own healthcare data. And that's kind of a scary position to be in, and I would like to have a backup system.
And not on paper, hopefully.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we ask all of our guests this question. You know, this is a technology world for us. What's your favorite technological invention, and what impact do you think it's had on our culture? And we'll start with Beth.
Well, in my other life, when I'm not busy being a lung cancer patient, I am a graduate student in religious studies, and it's a toss-up for me between antibiotics and the printing press. As much as we've maligned paper at this conference and in our, you know, talking about healthcare technology, wow, just the thousands of years of conversations and thinking and ideas that we're able to have access to because of printing is pretty amazing. On the other hand, antibiotics. You know, I had a burst appendix when I was 11. If it weren't for antibiotics, I wouldn't have lived long enough to be a lung cancer survivor.
Max?
I think probably photography is one of my favorite innovations, to be able to capture a moment in time and a feeling and an image and share that with people who are not there is pretty powerful stuff.
We've never had that as an answer. Well, thank you both for being here. Max Stroud is lead consultant at Galen Healthcare, and her sister Beth, a PhD candidate in religious studies at Princeton and a lung cancer survivor, have joined us on this episode of Steps to Value. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jordan Blinn, and I support and cultivate chapter leadership at HIMSS. You're listening to Steps to Value.
Do you have a story like the Stroud sisters? How has you or your siblings' health impacted your view of the healthcare system? Send us your thoughts as a voice memo or an email, and we'll play it or read it on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send your comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guests, Beth and Max Stroud, for sharing their perspectives on the state of health data interoperability from the patient's perspective. For more information on everything we talked about with today's guests, please visit this episode's landing page in the HIMSS Health IT Value Suite. Steps to Value is a HIMSS North America production, and the series is co-produced by Adam Baser. Kelly Lippitt is our story editor and guest relations manager, and I'm Rod Pihowski. We'll see you next time on Steps to Value.